How can architects contribute towards making our lives better? That's the question we want to ask in our first discussion today. Once upon a time, architects relied on princes and popes for patronage. Humble people couldn't afford their services. Even today, the one-off architect-designed house remains a privilege. It takes money and commitment to commission an architect to design a private dwelling, rather than buying a project home or an existing house. In the public realm, it's a different story. Behind every big building, be it a bank, a shopping centre, or a hospital, there's an architect to take the credit or the blame for its design. But let's face it, most architecture fails to uplift the spirit and engage the community. And most architects, preoccupied perhaps like most of us with scratching out a living, can forget that their profession has the power to make a significant contribution to improving the quality of life for all of us. It's these issues that the Affirmative Architecture Conference addressed last week in Melbourne. And I'm joined now by Martin Hook, Associate Professor of Architecture at RMIT University, who convened the conference, and by one of the international guest speakers, the British architect Deborah Saunt, whose practice is involved, among other things, in the design of sustainable housing communities. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
If we go back to the emergence of modernism, there was a widespread belief back then, wasn't there, that architecture should provide effective solutions that would benefit the community and the individual.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one of the key underpinnings of modernism was this notion that architecture was there to provide not only sustenance but also some sense of quality to people's lives, and it was beyond a notion of a service provision. It was the architect taking a very positive role and engendering their idea of what they thought the city should be about and what they thought housing should be about, and really making a comment in the manner in which society should embrace the buildings and the way that the buildings should embrace society.
And in America, among the champions of the school of thought that architecture should have a social conscience was Buckminster Fuller. Now, many of our listeners would have heard of this rather eccentric figure, but Martin, tell us how Bucky Fuller set out to do good.
Well, I suppose the interesting thing about Bucky was that he lost a child, basically, through disease, and set about from that point in time with a mandate to begin to try and resolve the manner in which housing was produced, and the manner in which that housing could be produced effectively and efficiently, and so that everyone could actually get access to an affordable, clean, functioning, well-designed dwelling. And particularly the way in which he looked towards notions of manufacturing and the way in which, I suppose, the factories of America could be re-geared from producing planes and bombs towards producing dwellings that would reduce the sense of disease or more so begin to kind of build a notion of community.
So this was very much in the spirit of the sort of thing that Charles and Ray Eames were trying to do as well, turning the energies of wartime production to peacetime production of houses and, in their case, furniture.
Absolutely, and I think a very committed embrace of the notion that architecture could in fact provide solutions, and architectural thinking when applied to a problem would provide quite a different solution than an engineering solution or a cultural, artistic, or even a project management solution.
Well, let's go from Buckminster Fuller's America. Let's go across the pond. Deborah, would you point to Britain as having set good examples of how architects can give back to society and perhaps uplift the spirit in the process?
Well, I think there's been a bit of a quiet revolution going on recently in the UK. For the last 10 years, there's been a number of projects where there's been more of a bottom-up approach. And so you're seeing communities being built with really high quality local architecture designed for local people with their involvement. And you're just getting much more cohesion on the ground, so that real communities are sort of beginning to build in areas where there was hope for regeneration, and it really has been proved to be taking place. So it's a kind of quiet revolution. You're not going to find icons here. You're just going to find good quality architecture at a local scale.
Well, that's very interesting, because if you go back to the 60s and 70s, when much British architecture and much British town planning was enthralled to Le Corbusier, to his notion of what a city should look like, and also to his notion of what architecture should look like, his brutalist notion, their attitudes then seem to have been distinctly top-down rather than bottom-up.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think what happened within modernism was it all became this fantastic system. So you'd take the transport, you'd take the housing, and you'd take the people, and you'd kind of apply them in this layer cake way without actually remembering there's a synthesis, and that's called real life, and that generally transport, your car, takes place next to and inside your home in the garage, and that you will be using both the road and your home simultaneously. And I think now architects are kind of asking that we do a number of things simultaneously, that we can understand the city and its big mega systems and infrastructures, but at the same time we can understand how a house and a home works, and that we kind of bring out the benefit of both together. So that kind of the positive tradition after the war of people like the Smithsons in the UK is now being picked up by a younger generation who really want to make homes fit for everybody.
Well, it's interesting that you talk about homes that people want to live in. Architectural projects that we notice are usually the big ones, not the little social housing projects. But I wonder whether either of you think that there's been a public backlash to the edifice complex and the enormous amounts of money being spent on architectural landmarks in cities.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's come yet in Australia, but I don't think it's very far off. I think at some point in time, this focused on major projects will shift back to people asking where are the minor projects, and how will the new stadium actually impact on my day-to-day life.
Well, I think also in the UK, the revolution in that respect has been taking place. Last year, the Stirling Prize was won not by a great big art gallery or a great big museum or a new office block, but in fact by a small surgery, a kind of hospital building that's probably under 200 metres squared, very, very small, very intimate. And everyone was really shocked that something so small, so minor, could get such a major prize. And I think people are reevaluating where value lies really now. You know, it doesn't have to be related to scale and bigness.
Mm. So this is in sharp contrast to what went on not all that many years ago, when all that money was spent in London on the Millennium Dome.
Not dissimilar. It's ironic you should mention the Millennium Dome, because it was in fact the same architect who produced the winning Maggie's Centre last year in London. But it's a really small project, very well produced by a really good architect. So.
We've looked at the Maggie Centres on this show. I think they're obviously a wonderful venture. If our architects are producing architects who, before they know it, will be designing opulent houses for the rich and working on multi-million dollar public buildings, are they and the society they serve missing out on something important?
Yeah, well, I think the really interesting thing is that now we're facing almost an entire generation who's never designed an affordable house. And there's then implicit within that the idea that perhaps these young architects have never felt the satisfaction of actually having an immediate impact on somebody's life and seeing the transformation from moving from, insufficient accommodation across to something which is well built, something which is well designed, and something that they contributed to the construction of. And I think that the lack of investment in social housing in Australia is now facing this real position where there is this missing generation that has gone through that process and had that experience.
In the UK, I understand that even small public buildings are opened up to architectural competitions. I don't think that's the situation here. Martin, do you think that we as consumers of architecture would be better served if it were?
I think that what the competition system, which is predominantly in Europe and to an extent in the UK, I think what that actually starts to do is it not only it sustains younger practices through a fee, marginal fee that they might get paid to compete in the competition, but what it also does is it allows the community to get hold of young architects who are fresh, they're keen, they're more willing to work harder to try and establish themselves in the architectural community, that you'll get as a public, I believe you'll get more value for money than the risk or the apparent risk that you might face of applying public funds to a young, relatively inexperienced architect.
Well, I always liken it to, you know, if you want mass production when it comes to eating, you go to McDonald's. You know, if you want a real meal that's something that you're going to enjoy and that's probably reflects where you are in the world, you go to a local restaurant. And I think that's what, same with architecture. You want good architecture, it should come from local architects who care about or can operate in many different local conditions but really care about where they are. And unfortunately, larger practices just can't afford to do that. They're big machines, you know, and they can't give that level of kind of personal commitment.
No. Well, I think the contribution of both of you to this show certainly constitutes a real meal. Martin Hook and Deborah Sant, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on By Design, a trip to the beautiful Glasshouse Arts and Entertainment Centre in Port Macquarie.